Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yeah, say your name.
Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
I'm a little late there, but it is Friday, November 15th, 2013. My name is Matt Binder.
And I am Michael Brooks, and this is a Matt and Mike Friday
on The Majority Report. We are broadcasting to you live in the literal, but not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building.
In the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City, on today's program, the inimitable political maestro Cliff Schechter returns after a week absence. We're going to be talking about the health care rollout, Republican cynicism, and Obama failures. We're also going to talk about the midterms and the Chris Christie fraud. Katie Kabusick, a reproductive justice activist and writer, is going to stop by really briefly to talk about a way that you can support Texas women as they fight to preserve reproductive rights and Planned Parenthoods in that state, even as they are viciously under assault. Also
giving us movie reviews, recommendations, I mean, this week, Matthew Film Guy Matthew.
Live
in studio, that's right. And you could pretty much assume that our movie talk will transition into TV talk, and our TV talk will ultimately transform into a discussion about the world of The Walking Dead.
Zombies will probably be mentioned.
Yes.
I will be totally at a loss in trying to steer the conversation towards mafia shows or something I understand, but it will be fun. Probably, I'm guessing, some Obama impressions. Just to play it safe, I'm assuming that's probably what will happen.
Folks, is Obama a Walking Dead fan? Is that what you're trying to say?
We'll see whether he is.
All right, we'll
foreshadowing.
See.
Folks, today is the last day that you can vote in the podcast awards.
The last day. Last day. I really want to drive that home. It is the last day to vote for the Majority Report, for People's Choice, and Best News / Politics. It's at podcastawards.com. Once you vote and you click that submit form, you will receive an email with a confirmation link that you just have to click. That's it. Boom. You click it, and your vote is confirmed. Today's the last day. To all of you who've been doing it, thank you so much. To those of you who will be doing it for the first time today, what the hell took you so long?
But it's you're going to feel really guilty if you don't put in at least one vote.
At least one vote, yes.
Remember, and then an email sent to you, you just click confirm vote. It literally takes, I've been doing it every day. It takes 40 seconds.
And Michael hasn't even been voting for us. He's been writing an intersection.
Every day I write an intersection and I vote for Stefan Milieu just out of spite.
Oh, yes. For those who don't listen to the better half of the program, it seems like we're up against, in the politics section, Stefan Milieu, who you'll recall Sam Cedar debated. He's a YouTube famous libertarian. Come on. We have to beat him.
We're up against some really terrible competition.
Yes.
And we got to
hold it
down. And
by terrible competition, he means formidable competition in terms that they could beat us. Terrible in their politics if they defeat us. It's pretty bad to see those type of politics win over us.
This podcast award is like Scott Brown versus Elizabeth Warren. The stakes could not be higher. The choice could not be clearer. Vote for the Majority Report. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. Thanks, everybody.
a girl and a half. She's got me going up and down. She's got me going up and down. Walking on the beaches, looking at the peaches. Well, I got the notion, girl, that you got some suntan lotion in that bottle of yours. Spread it all over my peeling skin, baby. That feels real good. All the skirts lapping up the sun. Lap me up. Why don't you come on and lap me up? Walking on the beaches, looking at the beaches. Well, there goes another one just lying down on the sand dunes. Go take a swim and see if I can cool down a little bit. Cause you and me, woman, we got a lot of things on our minds, you know what I mean?
Walking on the beach. Welcome back to the Majority Report. It's Casual Friday, returning now to his regular casual.
And it's good to have him back.
And it's great to have him back. His regular casual Friday slot is the great Cliff Schechter of Libertas LLC. But of course, before we get to Cliff, we need to play Cliff's song by Jimmy Reefer Cake. I think we still have the Stranglers on in the background for Cliff's intro, which I like.
Whoops.
That was pretty cool, actually. That adds a whole other mystique for Cliff.
All right, here we go.
All right, go ahead.
I like it. It's good stuff.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, new media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
And of course, Jimmy Reefer Cake. Welcome, Cliff. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing okay. I missed not being on with you guys last week, so it's good to be back. Obviously, there was sort of an important reason, but it's still good to be back.
Great to have you back on. Let's get to. I think it's important that we kind of basically get up to speed on healthcare, and basically there were two big things that happened yesterday. President Obama came out and announced some adjustments to the plan, which we'll get into and explain into more detail. But he ran some interference on the problems with the website and on people getting cancellation notices. And there was also a battle on my Facebook wall, which you joined, between me and a Republican friend, which really kind of, you know, it seems like right now that basically there's actual problems in the rollout of this plan. A lot of the problems with the plan are actually the aspects of the plan that Obama took from the Heritage Foundation and from Mitt Romney. So where there's a problem, it's mostly...
I'll say quickly, actually, it's quite admirable of you to have such pity in your heart that you have Republican friends. I respect that.
Well,
I kid, of course. We all have them.
We all have them.
And we all pity them.
And we all pity them, and they all, you know, try to give us aneurysms. But basically, so Obama yesterday came out, he pivoted, he said he's making provisions so people could keep their canceled plans. And, you know, Republicans are still running with this, even though they obviously have no alternative. And I think, as we said, and I think it's important to drive home, the actual problems with this plan are the center-right, right-wing aspects of the plan, not the Medicaid expansion, not the consumer protection. So, I don't know. I guess, what do you think about where we're at, Cliff, and what's going on and sort of what needs to happen here?
Well, I think two different things. I've got two different thoughts on this. One is the one that I mean, has maybe been the running theme of all of my appearances, you know, on this show going back, I guess, since we started doing this segment a couple years ago now. That's a scary thought right there. Which is what the Obama administration has accomplished through listening to the Timothy Geithners and Peter Orszags and people like that of the world has been, sadly, when they often have had, you know, a winning hand and have had the ability to make some more radical change that will affect people's lives more deeply and more quickly and in a more positive way, and bring some of the populist anger that has frankly been there since the multiple traumatic events of the aughts, if we call it that, you know, from the travesty in Iraq to of course the economic crash and some of the other things,
the failed decade.
Yeah, pretty much that whole first decade, yeah. Obviously. What President Obama did when he won with this huge mandate and the other side was completely discredited is he came in and he tried to make friends first and he tried to win people over that clearly, even though there were more so-called moderates, you know, or at least reasonable conservatives, most of whom have now been purged since 2008, that were still there in both the House and the Senate at that time, it was clear that they had to mostly march in lockstep, except for on a couple of social issue votes, with the people that were already clearly running their party and had been, for the most part, I would say, going back to, at the very least, 1994. And, you know, you can pick a different time. It varies gradations. They took over more and more control. And so just the way that not passing a big enough stimulus that would have had a big enough impact initially led people to, in a way, was so self-defeating because it almost discredited the idea of stimulus. Look, see, spending doesn't work, even though Keynesianism is what everybody's understood does work, you know, since the Great Depression. The same thing with this healthcare plan, which is essentially the lack of a public option providing, you know, competition to keep these guys honest in the insurance companies. Instead, he cut deals with the insurance companies, trusted that they would live up and have good faith, which they never do, trusted that Republicans who helped form and shape and change a bill that, as you pointed out, started the Heritage Foundation, was put into place by Mitt Romney in Massachusetts and statewide, that these guys with their suggestions and various changes meant that they were buying into the process instead of just delaying the process and allowing the right-wing populist anger in the form of the Tea Party to emerge so they could try to burn the whole thing down. And that has gotten us to where we are today because President Obama has no leverage over, is it his fault? You know, should he have said a caveat when he stood up and he said, you won't have to change your plans? He would have said, yeah, he should have. Yes, he should have gotten up and said, you'll be able to keep your plan unless your plan is ripping you off and not providing you with health care.
Right,
exactly.
If you're being
handled by your insurance company right now, then we will make sure that plan is replaced. That's the way it should have been put.
That's like,
but that's also been one of the key weaknesses of the Obama presidency, is not realizing that people grasp and learn the way people learn about everything in our lives, the way we've told, you know, before the printing press existed, the way we told, you know, one generation, you know, and the next generation, the next about things was through stories. That's how human beings learn. And stories need good guys, they need bad guys, they need to explain to people very clearly, here's what the problem is, and here's how we're going to fix it. Here's who's in the way of fixing it, and here's how we're going to beat them. And he's refused, except for during his two presidential campaigns, to do any of that. Even yesterday, during that speech, I caught him saying, you know, all the people on Capitol Hill are getting in the way. He's like, well, yeah, you know, more of the Republicans. Not more of the Republicans, only the Republicans. You know, and he still can't seem to break from that mentality of where you need to stand up and call the bad guys what they are, the bad guys. And so now that he has no leverage over the healthcare companies because he gave them everything he wanted, he subterfuged his own original plan to re-import prescription drugs, which would have cut that cost.
Right.
He subterfuged his own plan to have a public option, which would have provided competition in the, you know, Medicare being one of the most, right now, being one of the most efficient healthcare programs in the world, with very little overhead, no bloated salaries to bureaucratic CEOs not doing anything, and all the other waste that these guys spend on marketing their products and the rest. And they didn't want that kind of competition. So in the end, there's no leverage left. So for these guys, a lot of them who love to cancel their policies anyhow all the time, knew that now they could cancel their policies and hide it behind, oh, we have to do it because
and
of Medicare.
And that's also a really,
really
key point right there. There's two things to get into right there. I think we also should always mention parenthetically that in Massachusetts, when there was a rollout of the, you know, essentially the same plan, it also rolled out pretty slowly. Like, the only thing in the implementation of this that is unequivocally on the administration is the website, and that's obviously a debacle. But again, the complexity of the website reflects the complexity of the policy.
Well, and still the mentality, Mike,
right.
quite frankly, that we hire private contractors to come in. And,
well,
private sector is always more efficient. No, it's not. It's actually always more inefficient, which is a story we should be telling. You know, which we don't tell. We let the Reagan analysis of what the problem is in our society still exist as if it's as common wisdom.
And he did that in the speech. You know, and I'll get into the next question of what this kind of implicates about Reaganism, but also a certain strain of the Democratic Party, which I think is important to highlight. But he actually did that again in the speech, because he said, his speech yesterday, he said, his press conference, he said, you know, the federal government has a problem with who we're using as contractors for websites generally. So even as he pointed to, we have a contractor problem, the burden is still on the federal government, like,
right.
because they're not picking right. Well, the problem is
right.
actually
the
all these contractors.
Falls, right? It's not the contractors.
Right.
It's not Blackwater's fault for all the waste and abuse and, frankly, war crimes that went on in Iraq.
Absolutely.
Somehow that's the federal government's fault, who shouldn't have hired them ever. And in that way, it is their fault because they've given into this wisdom, but it's, you know, this conventional wisdom, but it's this mentality, that's caused our problems. So, I mean, you know, that obviously is my when you were talking about what is going on right now, that's my first answer to the whole thing is that obviously the way the program was set up, it was set up in as much of a compromised way that would rely on the Republican good faith to extend Medicaid to the states, which they didn't do, to join in the process, which Democrats did in that bloated, ridiculous, inefficient Medicaid Part D or Medicare Part D that was passed into the Bush administration that was literally a big gift to pharma and the rest, and Democrats didn't try to screw it and wreck it. They worked with it, that he assumed these guys. And that's, you know, and that, so there's that part of it. The second part of this whole thing is, as you're saying, this is a website and it's been screwed up in a pretty serious way, but it's a website. No one's died that I'm aware of while surfing online to get there. And this takes a while. Meanwhile, you know, we have Republicans, mind you, who are using the I word, who are accusing the word of incompetence. Remember these guys? The ones who had over 60 warnings, according to, was it Kurt Eichenwald's book, that 9/11 was coming, had what's his name, the head of the CIA, tell Bush that they'd never seen anything like it, and Bush's response was, well, now you've covered your ass. Tennant,
right.
That's who it was.
Tennant, he told Tennant, now you guys covered your asses.
And then he went back to the ranch after getting the August 6th presidential briefing, Bin Laden determined to attack the United States. He decided to go back to the ranch and ponder real hard about stem cell research policy while clearing fake brush.
Right.
That led to thousands of people dying in this country.
Katrina,
there was Katrina
the
Iraq. Night before. I'm sorry?
I just said Katrina, Iraq. I mean, I'm sure you're going there, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to. Yeah. I won't go through the details of all of it, but
yeah.
We're talking, if you go through each of these debacles, you will get into, especially the Iraq one, you will get into hundreds of thousands of deaths that occurred because of their criminal incompetence. And so for these people, and really, obviously, most recently, it's not like, oh, well, Bush is gone, that's changed. You know, they can't pass their own spending bills. They come up with a budget, Boehner and McConnell, and their own caucuses reject them. They, you know, and of course, there was just a month and a half or whenever ago when they shut down the government, and literally the majority of their party was ready to tank the world's economy. Based upon, I don't know, a dare, maybe? Who knows? But the point is, these are the people, these leaders who can't convince their own party not to tank the world's economy are the ones who are referring to President Obama as incompetent.
Well,
and so that's the other thing, is putting this in perspective,
right.
Which is, this is a screw-up by Obama, and at the same time, this is the opportunity to provide universal health care, because we can build upon this to people. We should all be out there fighting for this, because this will prove that the government can be a force of good, that the government can help people. You already have, well, if there's 106,000 people whatever who have signed up, that's 106,000 people that now have health care that's cheaper or have health care they didn't have before, not including all the people that have now gotten Medicaid, gotten health care through Medicaid extended to the states and all these other things. So, you know, we're solving a problem that is an embarrassment and, frankly, a crime in a modern economy, which is having a large share of our population who either have crappy health care plans that don't work or can't get health insurance.
Absolutely. And it's just,
that's what we need to look at here. In 2017, you know, which is another one of these things that just boggles the mind, why so many of these, you know, so many aspects of Obamacare were, hey, let's wait 5 years from now instead of let's do it next week. I'm, obviously, I know it takes time to change things. Well, 2017 is when the states start to get to experiment, and Vermont's ready to go on single payer.
Yep.
When that comes around, I mean, there are ways we are going to improve upon this thing. But what we need to do right now is stop these cynical bastards who, frankly, their health care plan. You brought up that argument, you had with your friend on Facebook, and I jumped in for fun, which I don't normally do on Facebook, but I figured, what the heck? You let me know about it. It'd be a fun time. Which was, you know, what is your plan besides applying leeches to people for a good bleeding when they don't have health care? I'd like to know.
Well, if they can afford the leeches. I mean, that, you know.
If they can.
Yeah, I don't. Nobody's handing leeches out, Cliff. What have you done to earn that?
That's right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they don't have a plan. There's no. The thing is, do we want to go back to Bush care? That should be the question everybody should be asking. Do you want to go back to where a corporate pharmaceutical big business bureaucrat sat there, looked at you, said, you've got. You have a pre-existing condition. You're not good enough to live, so go off and die somewhere.
Right.
That's what Obama, frankly, should be saying. That's the way this should be framed by our side.
There is the problematic path to getting to something better, and then there's F off and die, which is the Republican plan. Literally.
It is.
So,
I mean,
yeah, that's their
plan. If we take the hyperbole off, if we take all, you know, you and I and the way we talk and our hyperbole that we use out, you know, the swear words and the whatever, their plan very simply is die.
Die, right.
Because there's nothing else, there's nothing that they have offered that would prevent that.
And blow up the deficit and keep increasing the cost curve. You know, the last thought, though, that occurs to me, and we'll get to the midterms in a second, but I think it's important. It's a very kind of important point, and it goes back to what you were initially saying about the approach of Obama administration when they first came to office. And I think it's that, you know, and even using this term third way, which I'm about to use, makes me feel so antiquated. It feels like we're going back to, you know, like some Bill Clinton summit and in the mid-90s.
DLC too?
Yeah, and the DLC and this kind of model basically of centrist Democrat, and I wouldn't even argue accurate, based corporate Democratic politics. And the notion was that from a strategic and tactical point of view, you can kind of hug the Republicans where they're popular and then, you know, and slam them where they're not. And I think what's interesting is that with the exception of a very gifted politician like Bill Clinton and Obama at times, maybe that can be an effective rhetorical device. But when it comes to actual policy, you know, these third way policies are a mess because they are a mashup and they're not an elegant mashup. And it's always going to be harder to sell.
Neoliberalism in general is a mess because of that. Because it literally all it does is combine government incentives that involve subsidies,
right.
Tax cuts targeted here, there. They muck up the tax code so that, you know, to the point of where we need tax reform every 20 years when we know where that ends up. And it's not to say that that's better than nothing. It is.
Of course.
Quite frankly. And the protections, the fact that the government has gotten involved in health care through Obamacare to say we're going to extend Medicare. To say we're going to make sure if you have a pre-existing condition you can get covered and things like that are very important aspects of this to say the government.
And those are the liberal parts of the bill. We just need to keep hammering that.
Of course.
Yeah.
So don't take our criticisms of some of the other things. And,
right.
And for people now who don't have access, any tax credits or subsidies are important. They need that. And so I'm all for it. There just is a better way. And my guess is in 2017, Vermont will be showing us that better way.
Absolutely. So let's.
I wish 2017 weren't 4 years away, or you know, 3 years and change. But maybe before then. Right now, the answer to that is what we should be saying is let's fix Obamacare. Let's take this sort of template for moving people into to a place where they have health insurance, where they have peace of mind, and don't have to worry that an accident can happen at any time, and say, you know what, you guys are right. We really need to fix things. Let's lower the Medicaid age to 55. Which would improve costs within Medicare, would improve the cost for health care in these exchanges. You know, let's do things. Let's extend Medicare to anyone who wants to buy it. Let's have a public option. You guys like to say you're for competition. Prove you're not for crony capitalism. Prove that you actually believe in the market and you do believe in competition. Let's see if they can compete. You know,
and if government is so terrible,
Obamacare and try to extend what we know will work.
And if government's so terrible, why would anybody want to sign up for the public option anyways? But I think you're
That's right. I mean, it's inefficient and blurred. It's Soviet. Like the post office and the DMV. Oh, my God, help us.
Yeah, Lord help us. No, but I think it's important, as you say, that, you know, for what it's worth, though, that President Obama really does, in my view, still deserve credit, because even this whole conversation we're having with the mistakes and the problems in implementation, and another fundamental distinction between all of the disasters of the Bush years, is that in this case, they're trying to move the ball in the right direction, and that needs to be emphasized too.
So no, it has to be huge. They are saying that this is in both our interests, in terms of our morality,
right,
in terms of a modern democracy, and it is in our common good societal interest, which is the way, no matter what any teabagger who claims to understand the Constitution but can't read will tell you, this is what our country was founded based upon. We are a community. We rise and fall together. People understood that back in certain past times, no matter what this radical right movement is now. So, this is important, and this can be built upon, and this can be improved. So everybody out there who's progressive should be defending. You know, it doesn't mean you have to sit there and if you be dishonest if you don't want, you know, and say, well, this is perfect, and the website's just damn spanking wonderful. But no, you should defend the concepts behind this. You should defend the fact that kids can stay on their parents' health care until they're 26, that pre-existing conditions are now no longer something that will prevent people from getting health care, that there isn't a lifetime limit so that suddenly, oh, you're getting your chemo? Oh, sorry, you've hit your lifetime limit. Or if you hit your yearly limit, you can't do that anymore. Go off and die. You know, these are all important things that a civilized society does. And you should defend those and say, we will expand upon that by bringing the aspects that work, i.e. the governmental aspects that have worked for veterans and have worked for the elderly and others who've had access to them. We're going to bring those into the healthcare mix to more. That becomes more and more the norm.
Absolutely. So let's move to some of the midterm or off-year election results that happened a couple of weeks ago. And I think, you know, a little bit later on, we'll kind of get into the interior of the Democratic Party, which I was actually on Blogging Heads yesterday talking about some of these issues. And there's a lot of interesting fault lines.
Did you get to
there.
Talk about Governor Hamburglar, New Jersey?
I didn't, but I want you. We're going to get right there in a second. So I feel like those are the three things. I think with Bill de Blasio in Boston, and there's some other examples where there was a socialist looks like she's about to get on the city council in Seattle. I mean, there was an anti-austerity progressive.
That was a very overall very progressive.
Very, very progressive. And then
people
there's the
need to remember again that the Hamburglar himself. Tell me if you put that mask on him, you wouldn't think he was the Hamburglar. Admit it. Okay, that's where we're going to start. Second of all, even he. Did you see? I mean, you know, I came back here to New York for to see my family. Sadly, my dad passed away, and that's the reason I wasn't on the show last week. Yeah. I was able to, you know, to see some of the campaign ads and some of what was going on here. And you know, all of Christie's ads that I saw was him pretending to be liberal. It was all him hugging people after Sandy.
So he's kind of the fraud, right? Like, there's the progressive wave, there's the fraud.
Like one of us, which is, I take care of people who need the government.
Mm-hmm.
That was his message.
Right.
So even he ran. But you're right. What happened in Seattle is huge. The city that I currently live in, Cincinnati, you had some of these Koch brothers-like, ALEC-based, you know, pension reform that essentially was going to rob working people of these pensions they built up over their lifetimes, who worked for the city in Cincinnati, was not only defeated when these guys came in and spent their money, it was defeated 80-20.
That's great.
It was destroyed. All right, their attempt to attack, you know, look at that as in a way almost a proxy for these attacks on privatizing Social Security, because that's about where the population stands, privatization versus Social Security, 80-20. Well, that's how it went down in Cincinnati. There were a lot of progressive victories. Obviously, Bill de Blasio's victory was a huge one.
It was wonderful.
The current state of the in Virginia it was huge. You know, we can have our conversation, I'm sure we are going to, about Terry McAuliffe's centrist instincts.
Let's get
time,
to that in a minute.
He ran
but
in Virginia on gay marriage, on being pro-abortion rights 100%, and on not just supporting a background check, but on supporting an assault weapons ban and supporting limiting magazines, I think, to 10 bullets or less. He ran on a very
and taking a Medicaid expansion. So, but we'll get back to that in a second. But first, let's the Chris Christie obsession, I think, is just it's so stunning on so many levels to use a Sam word, because it's like, just as you're saying right there, his advertising, his reelection campaign was built on thematically progressive and inclusive themes, which is completely belied by his record. The other thing that also is fascinating about Christie is that this is a guy, he's Crips from Obama on every single major address he has. His Republican address in 2012 was a version of Obama's 2004 speech. It's improbable that I'm here. Who would have expected it? Although, on the other hand, it's like, well, no, it's actually really not that improbable that, like, a big obnoxious guy would be governor of New Jersey. And his acceptance speech after his reelection hit these themes of, in his own way, not red, not blue, competent, bringing people together. And it's amazing to me the way, like, you know, he's Morning Joe's love interest, and everybody has this kind of passion
people
for him.
People like Joe Scarborough and some of these guys, they're just looking, they're just begging, give me a Rudy Giuliani Republican, give me a John McCain. You know, these guys.
He's like, but he's also like a George Bush, I would argue. I mean, in the sense that his policy.
But I'm talking about in terms of image.
Oh, in terms of image, but his record is very right wing, and it's incredibly crony and incompetent. I mean, I just want you to kind of run down the list here on Christie, because it's just incredible the fraud.
You know, first of all, yes, let's run down the list in general, which is, first of all, berates people in a nasty way whenever anybody disagrees with him, is a pretty vicious guy. He's gone after teachers, cut budgets for all sorts of things, mental health, the rest, has decimated budgets in New Jersey. And, oh, by the way, and a piece recently written for the Daily Beast by Dean Obadella, who I know you've had on this show, his economic record sucks.
Yep.
Okay, which is the New Jersey's unemployment rate is 8.5% right now. All right, it's 41st in the nation. It's 44th in job growth. Its credit rating has been downgraded twice. All right, it's one of seven states whose economy actually shrank in 2011, ranked 47th in terms of GDP growth. It's one of the highest tax states still, even with all of that. And his taxes don't seem to be doing anything. Mortgage delinquencies have gone way up. Poverty's gone way up. So by any measure, and granted,
sounds like a good Republican record to me.
And I'm not a Republican who likes to lie and claim, you know, Bill Clinton, everything that happened in Arkansas was his fault when he ran. And you know, I understand there's other factors going on there in New Jersey. I'm not blaming Christie for everything.
Right.
But that's a pretty crappy economic record overall. He certainly hasn't helped things. And if anything, he's made things worse, far worse with his policies. Then you start talking about the cronyism. He's been investigated by the Justice Department. He gave all sorts of contracts to campaign supporters when he was elected. He's had to apologize before for targeting others rivals of his in terms of his prosecutions as a state attorney. It goes on. The Romney people looked at the portfolio of things that this guy could get in trouble for and said, we can't touch him with a 10-foot pole.
He lobbied
even
for the financial services
industry.
You'd
only need like a 1-foot pole.
As well, before he was, you know, in elected office, he was a lobbyist, and he lobbied to exempt Wall Street from New Jersey's anti-fraud consumer protections.
That's right, and he was lobbying for Bernie Madoff, which
right.
was nice of him. I mean, he's had a record of exactly what it is that has caused so much trouble and wrecked our economy. He's a record of crony capitalism, which overturning regulations that are necessary for our economy to function, instead of guys on Wall Street handing each other basically the equivalent of brown bags full of money while telling the rest of us a story that costs us our lives, a life savings. He's shown that propensity while he's been governor of New Jersey, while, as we've pointed out, their economy has done terribly, while he's hurt teachers, he's hurt firemen, he's hurt policemen, he's hurt others, he's gone after public sector unions. You're talking about a guy here that just because there could be no better equivalent than what happened with Rudy Giuliani, who he's even more right-wing than, by the way, because he's also anti-choice, anti-gay marriage, passed, a few gun control or gun safety laws, as I would call them, but then vetoed a bill that he vetoed his own bill that he'd proposed, so you now can still get a sniper rifle for anybody flying out of Newark anytime soon. That might be a concern of yours, that someone can get a sniper rifle and sit 500 yards away and shoot at aircraft. So, I mean, we're talking about now, you know, rifles, 50 calibers that can take down small aircraft. So he's started to bend to the right already in a number of areas. So he's terrible on social policy. But again, Giuliani's approval rating was tanking in New York. 9/11 happened. He had one day where he acted like a human being, or maybe a couple days, hugged people, you know, seemed like he was in control. And that was something that rehabilitated this guy from the ashes. I don't think Christie's numbers had fallen quite as low, but they were in the low 50s and they were on a downswing. And then what happened in New Jersey. And essentially, he showed that unlike certain other Republicans, he was actually willing to touch a black guy.
Right.
So that was enough for people to say, oh, my God, he's a moderate, because he put his arm around the black president and said, I'll accept funding to not have my people starve and not have my people be homeless. And, you know, that changed the entire look, but it didn't change what's underneath with this guy, and that will come out.
That this is really important, because the last thing that I think is important to emphasize, and we've been getting at here, is the whole frame of him as a, you know, as this Republican moderate. And I mean, for me, in my mind, like, the last Republican moderate that existed was, you know, Lincoln Chafee, who's now I think he was an independent. Now he's actually a Democrat, right? He was an actual, like, Republican centrist in the Senate.
Or Mike Castle.
Or Mike Castle. Right. There were a few people like this
in Delaware.
And that meant that they had actual distinct policy positions on the environment, on whatever. You know, Chris Christie, to me, again, I think you're right in terms of the politics of a Northeasterner who cannot translate to the rest of the country because of how obnoxious he is, and has been kind of overhyped nationally. The Giuliani parallel is there. But I think in other respects, it strikes me as being a lot like George W. Bush, in the sense that this state record that's incredibly crony, that's ultra right wing, and there's just this agreed upon brand that everybody's perpetuating of moderation that is all in just a tonal stance. It has nothing to do with policy, and it's distinct from, you know, there's the Tea Party crazies, and then there's the crony George W. Bush, Chris Christie Republicans that just want the party to tone it down a little bit so they can privatize Social Security and re-detonate the economy.
Right, but in the end, he's going to be the worst of all worlds.
Yes.
I will say here right now, and I'm happy to be corrected if I'm wrong, I will say here, he has no chance in the Republican primaries.
Yeah, I agree.
And here's the thing, is he is actually quite right-wing on a number of issues, which are going to come out, which Northeastern moderates and others are going to get angry about and not like when they find out more about his record on issues like choice and on issues like gay marriage and on other issues, which they don't really, you know, people who are lower information don't know about. So the reality is he's really right wing, and some of his biggest support has come from crossover Democrats, independents, moderate Republicans. When his real record comes out, that's going to change that. Yet, the beautiful thing about him is that the few areas where he has actually realistically been semi-moderate, which is sane, let's call it, accepting money for Sandy, being in favor of some form of immigration reform, in favor of a few forms of gun safety legislation.
Speaking out on Islamophobia.
Believing in global warming.
Yeah.
Global warming, immigration, and gun control are all non-starters with the Tea Party. You're done.
Right.
You can't have been in favor of any of that stuff. And here's the thing. You can hide from that stuff and say, oh, I've changed. You can pull a Mitt Romney all you want. Here's what you can't do. Just ask Charlie Crist down in Florida. You can't get rid of images of you with your arm around the black president. And if you don't think, when they're listing all of these things about him, his support for various gun regulation, his support for even for civil unions, frankly, which is not nearly far enough, which is just splitting the baby in half and doesn't make anybody happy, but it's certainly going to piss off right-wing Tea Partiers and evangelicals, his support, past support for immigration reform and admitting global warming's happening, well, you combine that with the image they're going to put in those ads, because those are the ads that I would cut if I were them, with him having it, you know, which they did to Charlie Crist over the stimulus in Florida and destroyed Crist in the Republican Party, him with his arm around Obama, you know, forget about it. He's done.
No, I think you're absolutely right.
Forget about it. And you know what? That's my segue to the final thing I will tell you, which is, I will give this to you as someone, and you brought up the Northeast and everything. The media being centralized in New York and Washington, and I don't say this with any sort of disrespect to people who've lived their lives in New York or lived their lives in Washington. I am a born and bred New Yorker, and I still love New York. I lived for 8 years in Washington, D.C. I went to college in Philadelphia. You know, I spent most of my life in the Northeast, but I will tell you this as somebody who's now lived in the Midwest for a couple of years, which is that Chris Christie yelling at people, berating people in their face, loudmouth thing, it doesn't play.
Right.
In places like where I live.
Oh, totally.
It's not considered charming. It's considered obnoxious, even among people that might agree with him politically. It's considered rude. It was the problem with Giuliani. And then you add in the ethnic component of it, which is not fair, but is just being honest with you, which is you're talking about evangelical voters who have to look at an Italian Catholic, you know, who fits the stereotype of the Sopranos. And I'm telling you, there will be a lot of people that will just be viscerally uncomfortable with him. So when you combine everything we've just talked about, from the crony capitalism to the personality issues in the Midwest and South that aren't going to play, to the fact that he's been too chummy with Obama and too quote-unquote moderate or sane on issues the Tea Party will freak out about, to Northeasterners finding out that he really is much more right-wing than they think, add all that up, I will tell you right now, the dude's not making it through Republican primaries. And if he made it to a general election, he'd be killed. But he won't, because he's not making it through the primaries.
I agree with you 100%. And I'd only add that he also spoke out really eloquently, and I will always give him credit for this on Islamophobia in New Jersey, which is like the
last
thing.
That was another thing.
That's another thing you could.
And you're right, and he should get that to his credit, like
right.
he did for supporting immigration reform
right.
and a few other things.
But that's going to kill him in a primary.
That's going to kill him among the Tea Party. That's a brilliant point, Michael, that I forgot. I mean, it's none of that. Let's see how that plays in the South Carolina primary.
Absolutely.
And the Republicans right now are talking about, well, we need to add Midwestern primaries, you know, because that will help more. That we've lost the Midwest lately. It's more moderate in the South, whatever. I'm telling you, in places like Indiana and Michigan and rural parts of Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, you know, Ohio, where you've got a lot of the constituency that votes Republican, Chris Christie's attitude, the way he behaves, ain't going to play.
The summary is going to be like, why is he yelling at me when he hugged the black guy? That's more like a Canada accent, but you get
my point.
That's
exactly right.
So final question here. So we were talking before about, with the exception of Christie, it was a great night for progressive politics, I think, a couple of weeks ago from de Blasio. And I agree with you that McAuliffe did. He also ran on Medicaid expansion. He did run a progressive campaign, but there's no question.
And he ran on raising the minimum wage.
Raising minimum wage. He ran
raising the state. I mean, you know.
But he's a very – his record and who he is and what he represents as a pretty transactional fundraising guy is something that, to say the least – progressives are going to be skeptical of, and I think just average voters who are not, you know, maybe genuinely more in the middle or genuinely kind of looking for the types of issues that, you know, someone like Elizabeth Warren would raise, are going to have some allergy to him. And that's probably why in some ways it was so close. I mean, you know, that election could have been a blowout considering who he was running against.
Right.
So along comes David Frum, who is, you know, in his own quest to kind of stay politically relevant.
Who's part good moderate, who says some smart, I mean, he's
right.
been terrific on gun safety, on immigration, other things. Part of the time just seems to be trolling the left.
And I think this is a great example of, he has a new column which does troll the left a bit, but I think is important to address, because he's basically said, look, liberals and progressives are going to be excited about de Blasio, and they're excited about Elizabeth Warren's rising influence and everything. But Terry McAuliffe and kind of corporate-friendly, transactional Democrats are the future of the party.
It's okay. You're back.
Okay.
I heard de Blasio, and then
And then basically Frum said, look, that's what liberals are excited about, but the real future of the Democratic Party is Terry McAuliffe and kind of transactional, corporate-friendly Democrats. I don't buy it, but I want your take. I want your take on that.
All right, well, here's why I don't buy it either.
Yeah.
Not because there isn't a large faction of new Democrats. Thankfully, the more right-wing, socially, you know, 19th century antebellum.
All right, sorry, folks. Cliff, go right ahead.
So, sorry about that. There's two things I think that are important there that to discuss. One is that I think, obviously, a number of eloquent arguments have been made. When you look at some of the people that are getting elected now, you still have to look at the victory de Blasio won, and Elizabeth Warren, and some of the voices, you know, You've got people like Sherrod Brown and Tom Harkin who are in, you know, the swing state Midwest, are two of the strongest voices on protecting Social Security. The culture of the party has changed. It has moved to the left. There are things that you used to be able to argue for, and there wasn't even controversial, or at least it only was among certain segments, like the way you could be for these free trade deals and only labor would fight with you. Now, a huge number amount of the base and members of the House and Senate are already walking away from these new free trade deals. It's not to say they may not get passed. It's just to say that the party and is in a different place. But in addition to that, you know, the overall electorate is in a different place and has moved to the left. The electorate's getting younger. It's getting more mixed ethnically, racially. It's becoming more female. It's becoming more urban. It's becoming more educated. You know, all these things we know. And so what I would say to you is it doesn't really, you know, what Terry McAuliffe personally believes doesn't really matter to me.
Right.
Do I care what is in somebody's heart or do I care what they do? He felt to win that race in Virginia, he had to run as an out-and-out progressive, right? And so de Blasio, I believe, and Warren really believe that. But in the end, you know, about one of the examples I can think of, you know, I mean, politicians change all the time. You know, Lyndon Johnson originally was a segregationist.
Yep.
He was our best civil rights legislation of the century. You know, Harry Truman originally came up with the local machine tied to the mob in Kansas City. You know what I mean? And look at the Kennedys, for example, who turned on the mob. How you get there and what you choose once you're there, and that's what's going to be very interesting looking forward about Hillary Clinton, who obviously is very tied to the DLC, but is a pretty smart politician, and I think that really in the end, that the energy in the Democratic Party is towards having a progressive run and do progressive things. And the question is, you know, which of there will be people that were much more moderate before that you will suddenly see moving to the left. We've already seen it, and we saw it in that McAuliffe campaign.
I think that's exactly right, and in some ways the most validating thing of progressive politics and where we're going is the fact that someone like Terry McAuliffe, who is always savvy at positioning himself, is positioning himself there. I think you're exactly right. Cliff Schechter.
Not just positioning himself there in New York, Massachusetts, whatever, in Virginia.
Virginia, totally. Cliff Schechter, so good having you on. Great talking with you, and obviously wishing you all the best. And, thanks so much, man.
We shall chat, my friend, and it's good to be back.
All right, great. Be well, Cliff.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right, folks, going to take a very quick musical break here, and we'll come right back with Katie Klobusik. This is she's got one of those hard Polish names. I apologize. We'll be right back.
No for them concrete, they boy, but love a juice, watch ya, chuck it, boom, you know what I mean, me dip out a whole 14, know what I mean, and reload my next magazine, know what I mean, and wounded them mousing scheme, know what I mean, no for them I move sideways and lean, know what I mean, can't come out when Monday, know what I mean, we no like them colonial regime, know what I mean, Ethiopian not like Mussolini, know what I mean, me queen of the rock and come in, know what I mean, and jump on the big trampoline, know what I mean, and boost up our self-esteem. You know what I mean? No, for one, the home and kitchen so clean, know what I mean? And which recipe that does steam, know what I mean? The lyrics, them a flow like a stream, know what I mean? Make you feel like you're living in a dream, know what I mean? It come to the crap, man, a cream, know what I mean? It come to discipline, man, a dean, know what I mean? Me tougher than a home and limousine, know what I mean? We step in, we fresh and we clean, know what I mean? I burn the stink, yes, I'm green, know what I mean? Better listen up, careful and keen, know what I mean? I poop on as a rock and commit. We celebrate like I finished probation, boy. Not head with no chaser, boy. From the mouth, I can spit out a razor, boy. Open up your face, you like your boy. In his prime, eat food, dinner time. Junior gong, past beginners. Handle business, black velvet, sippers. Females never bid us, farewell, they with us. Cause we arrive on a scene just like a high beam, nah, I mean. Don't let us have to make the nine scream, nah, I mean. At the racial policing regime, nah, I mean. Spiritual well like an Elohim, nah, I mean. In a casino or a yacht, wherever I'm seen. My brothers and sisters are never forgotten, nah, I mean. Don't want to hear another soldier drop, nah, I mean. Another dope addict is shot with the morphine. And feds are indicting my block, nah, I mean. They're wearing reds from their shoes to their top, nah, I mean.
I'm wishing that all the violence would stop, now I mean?
When I like this song, I'm sorry, now I mean? And some boy stop like ice cream, now I mean? From a boy make the fence intervene, now I mean? We send a war, go take him choppy, now I mean? Parabellum, them a itch up in a spleen, now I mean? In a queen's gunman reign supreme, now I mean? Kingstonians are real blood fiends, now I mean? The world is a big crime scene, now I mean?
Yo, yo, Mr. President.
Somebody the real buffalo in a Rastafari regime. Bush bungalow where me dwell with my queen. Trash to the bundung in a camouflage green. Look for them where can't go the places we've been. Look for them where can't sit the sights where we've seen. That's why them face all at me so on a lean, I mean. They better mind we kick it off clean, I mean. Man a gangster just like Yamdeen. That mean them can't serve Congo jet puts up in, I mean. And who you want come in convene, I mean. Attorney of Iraq and come in, I mean. Me pocket them green like Sperlin, I mean. Me regular fly out and fly in, I mean. The stadium park like sardine, I mean. Can't guess me speed up as the whole need caffeine. Run out a red and antihistamine. Watch over golem come in like Listerine. You think I lie way better than Al Pacino, I mean.
It's genocide, it's a genocide. It's a genocide, it's a genocide. Fifth floor cooking raw, had my own supply. Cause of capitalist ways, that was back in the days. So now I do rap and it pays.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks. Very sorry about that delay, folks. Joining us now is Katie Klubusik. Is that correct, Katie?
Nice job.
Nice.
I know it's terrible. It's why I blog under Katie Speak. I'm not trying to be anonymous. There's just no way I expect anyone to spell or pronounce that thing.
Okay. So you, Katie is a writer, a reproductive justice activist. And I wanted to just have you on briefly to just tell it basically the laws in Texas that kind of came to national attention, the really intense anti-women's health, anti-choice push that was kind of brought to the national consciousness by Wendy Davis are still being pushed forward in Texas. They're currently in kind of legal in a legal process right now. And I want you to both speak briefly to that. And then also you're involved in organizing an online telethon event, which supports Texas Woman. Essentially you're fundraising to help keep what few Planned Parenthood and other women health centers that are operating in Texas open and providing services while this goes through its legal process.
Sure. Just a quick correction, just for people who are listening. We're actually the organization is the fundraiser is sponsored by Narrow Pro-Choice America, and NIAF, New York Abortion Access Fund. So it's not directly associated with Planned Parenthood. Though they're definitely involved in the legal battle that's going on in Texas. So Wendy Davis's filibuster was just the first special session that Rick Perry called. He's so anti-choice, he called additional legislative sessions and managed to cram through HB2, which is one of those sort of omnibus trap laws. You guys talk about it a lot on the show. When those bills get pushed, they're just designed to close down clinics. They don't have anything to do with the safety and health of women. They're just pushed by an anti-choice agenda. They don't really respect my bodily autonomy, which is why I take it personally, even when it's not happening in my state. So the end of October, an admitting privileges requirement was struck down by the Fifth Circuit Court. And then on Halloween, the really awfully horrible Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott had sued for a stay in that decision, and he got it. So immediately effective was the admitting privileges provision. And so just clinics shut down across the state overnight. The people who work for Holden Health spent all night calling their patients who had appointments in the morning to tell them not to come. And so what's happened now is 246 out of the 254 counties in Texas have no abortion provider. There are only six counties in the entire state that have someone that can provide this legal medical procedure. So women are driving like 600 miles for appointments if they can even get there. It's really ridiculous.
Yeah, that's absolutely ludicrous. I mean, and that's really why I wanted to just have you on, even just, you know, relatively briefly, to just kind of highlight what's happening there, this kind of emergency that's taking place right now in Texas. So briefly, what is the state of where is the case at legally right now? What's the next process it's going to go through? And then explain this fundraiser and how people could get involved with it.
Sure. So the law was passed, and then pro-choice groups sued for a stay. Then the stay was lifted, causing the current crisis. And then the Center for Reproductive Rights and other sort of like legal action groups have gone to the Supreme Court and asked for an emergency appeal to lift the lifting of the stay, if that's not confusing enough for everybody. The problem is that goes to Antonin Scalia, because he's the one in charge of the Fifth Circuit Court. So it's essentially his decision unilaterally. I mean, he can bring in the other guys in the black robes, but he probably won't. So it's sort of up to him whether or not this law gets struck back down. And what happens if he decides to maintain the current state of affairs is that gives the Fifth Circuit sort of seal of approval on the admitting privileges law, and places like Wisconsin and Alabama have already struck it down. So you have one circuit court saying yes and one circuit court saying no, and that's the kind of thing that sends it to the Supreme Court, which is the whole point of the anti-choice movement, is to overturn Roe. So if you're in a safe blue state and you think that what's happening in Texas right now is not about you, you better believe this has everything to do with you, this state of emergency and the whole thing. So sort of last minute, because Texas is a state in crisis. I mean, there are other states, Ohio and Indiana, places that are a nightmare for women's rights as well. But Texas, because of the size and the population, is just really an immediate crisis. So the amazing pro-choice activist and comedian author Liz Winstead got together with Sarah Silverman, and are hosting an online telethon on Monday, November 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, with an unbelievable lineup. We're going to have Texas activists on stage. You guys had Sarah Slavin on. She was the woman that tried to testify before the Texas legislature. Troopers dragged her out. We've got comedians and writers and poets and pundits. It's going to be amazing.
Great. So, and just really, there's a link to your site. We're going to also put up a link to the telethon and the event. This is really, really important. I just wanted to have you on to kind of highlight this, because I think obviously, certainly people are familiar with the crisis in these states. I don't necessarily know that everybody's familiar with the fact that there is really a sort of state of emergency for women's health in Texas right now. Katie Klubusik, writer, reproductive justice activist, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us about this. Yeah. And, well timed that we lost her again. Anyway, it really is actually.
Tech difficulties seem to follow Matt and Mike's.
I think there's some
hosting,
type of Sam conspiracy.
Yeah, Sam's totally
here.
Set this up.
There's something. There's some
always.
Type of. There's
always.
Cedar has a hand in this.
Whether it's the printer, the internet connection, the phones, something will always happen.
Something. But at any rate, that is a really, really important thing to follow, and you should definitely check that out. We're going to take a brief break, and now...
Oh, a quick note, Blow, before we go into that break.
Yes.
Our break music. Rob Ford, the mayor of Toronto, has been giving us so much entertainment these past few weeks, and there's a great remix that a DJ Steve Porter made. He uploaded it to YouTube last week. We have been laughing at it in the office here.
It's Jay-Z's new Tom Ford song on his latest album.
It's hilarious. We'll play this.
This is the best thing to come out of Jay-Z's new album. So enjoy this and the break music, and we will be right back. In person, I already see the man. He's here. Film guy, Matthew Weiss. We'll be right back. Is it on?
want to release this video. Your mayor, you asshole.
It is what it is, and I can't change the past. Am I in it?
No. Have I tried? Yes. It's my mistake. I know I have no rank left. I know
Dylan Crack
was wrong. Rob Ford. Folks, I'll do anything for Lord.
Drunken stupors off the hall.
Rob Ford, it's a fact. I smoke crack.
I don't recall.
I wanna be high. I smoke now. I want to smoke 1,000 pounds. The city has the best crack.
What? I'm a busy man.
Game, I'll explain. I love crack cocaine. No, have I tried? God bless, it's my mistake. I know I have no rack left. I know
doing crack
was wrong. Rob Ford. Folks, I'll do anything for more.
I smoked a lot of it.
And thank the people for support.
It's disgusting, as I said before.
Rob Ford.
I smoked some crack, 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 crack. I smoked a lot of it. I smoked crack, 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 crack. I smoked a lot of it.
Your mayor, you have smoked crack.
It is what it is, and I can't change the past. I don't even remember after some of the stuff that you guys gave me, the state I've been in. That's a problem.
We are back on the Majority Report, and you could put the music completely down, Michael, because it's not. There we go. Oh, is this in your way? Oh, man.
See, I'm also a camera guy everywhere I go. So.
There you go.
Oh, man. Jeez.
No, is that...
This is
have,
quite...
You have to go that
I just
far.
Broke this. Wonderful. Oh, boy. Are you still... Is it in your way?
No, I'm good.
He's good. Let's play...
Let's do
Matthew
this.
Film
Here
song.
We go. Let's play Matthew Film Guy's theme song. Nope. You had it. Oh, my God.
Matthew the Film Guy is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such teams. Maybe you'll watch one and learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew, please recommend me a movie to stream.
All right, that is Matthew Film Guy's theme song. I love it. I think it's great.
Thank you very much.
He has a great theme song.
You have to get close.
Oh,
to...
yeah. Jason yeah. Pace. Once again, shout out to Jason Pace, the creator of that song.
All right. And Michael, congrats for figuring out how to do that. This is the most Michael's ever had to do with the board.
It's a lot.
Stopping a song, playing another song.
It's, believe me.
Putting up three mics instead of two.
I'm going to need a beer
after this. I see you earned it.
Matthew, how have you been?
I've been well. How have you been?
Got to get close to that mic.
Oh, geez.
Unfortunately, you can't relax.
I can't relax.
Yeah.
It's all right.
It's all right?
Yeah.
Michael, put his mic up just a little bit more. Maybe we could help him out here so he could...
His mic is up.
Okay.
I mean,
I feel good.
Couldn't get...
I can do
fine.
It.
Here we go.
Just,
so, yeah. As usual, when there's a Madden Mike Friday and we have you on, we're going to completely forget your movie recommendations to Sam. Because I personally don't remember them.
That's all right, and it's I'm glad.
What did you recommend? Do you remember?
What was last week's? You know, what? Let me see my notes here. Was it?
Did you
Who
recommend
cares?
These movies about like divorce or something?
Was it a separation?
A
yeah.
separation.
Ah, there we go. Okay,
that's some Iran stuff.
There we go.
I get it.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's a great film, regardless of
to keep the timeline correct for Sam.
Yeah.
He's gonna have to discuss that one with you.
That's fine.
So today let's talk about. Let's talk about some television first.
Okay.
Regardless of what you have for us recommendation-wise.
All right. I have a couple. It's good to know that I don't have to limit myself, I assume, to Netflix and Amazon streaming.
No, because unlike Sam, Michael and I do not have children.
Right.
nor do we have
a compunction about illegally downloading things.
Okay, I'm glad you brought it up. I'm glad you brought it up.
I was wondering how to say it, but that was very good. Yeah. Thank you.
And the wherewithal and the knowledge to know how to BitTorrent.
Indeed.
Yes.
Right.
So, let's get to it. What do you got for
television? Did you want to talk about television?
Let's talk about television. Okay. What have we been watching?
I've been watching The Walking Dead.
Of course. And as I said at the beginning of the show, this conversation will go from transition from movies to television to The Walking Dead.
And I thought, did I jump the gun?
To be honest, I didn't know we would jump that quickly.
I didn't know there was any transition.
Well, when Michael told me that my movie recommendation would be for you, I said I'd try to find something with some zombies in it.
Let's talk Walking Dead first.
I have to say, in all honesty, this has been my favorite season so far.
It has been great.
It's been great. A good balance of the sort of character stuff that they tried to sort of pull out of the other two seasons, but also enough kind of action and horror movie plot that you're not just going like, oh my God, what's going on here? We'll just kill this guy already.
And they've been building people up who aren't in the main group, too.
Oh, I love the actor who plays Ty, who was Cuddy on The Wire. He's been an amazing character this season.
Well, he's sort of a main character.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, usually in The Walking Dead, they would introduce someone, and you'd be like, oh, they're building that character to this episode. He's been introduced. He's going to die by the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This time, they've been sort of building people up. So you do care about these minor characters.
Yeah, like the doctor, the other doctor.
The doctor.
That was a rough
one.
Yeah.
There's some other people who are still with us who I'm sure won't be with us for long.
What's with that fruity kid? She's like
mentally
unbalanced. Wow, she's probably one of the creepiest characters the show's ever introduced.
I have to say that last week's episode was very good. We got
the one where everyone died? Sorry. No, spoiler alert.
Unbelievable.
The good thing about The Walking Dead is when
someone always dies.
And when he says everyone dies, he means no one that you could call, you have a name, that you could say by name.
Right. I'm assuming for the same reason that people are not tuning into the show anymore while you guys talk about this, that it doesn't matter if I cut it out later. Spoiler alert. We got to broaden the conversation.
There's a new Walking Dead showrunner this.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's his mandate to kind of keep it moving a little bit?
He's the one who directed that episode Clear last season.
Oh, okay.
Which was highly regarded as the best episode last season.
I don't know it well enough to know it by name.
Clear is the one where Rick reunites with Morgan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was by and far regarded as the best episode.
Well, because I've been wondering what had been happening to that guy for 3 years.
That's another thing I like about The Walking Dead, though. They introduced this character the first episode of the first season.
Yeah.
And we don't see him again till whatever episode in the third season.
And, of course, his life in the meantime has been horrible, as you would expect from an apocalyptic film or television show. And that actor I happen to love a lot. He was also in what was the name of that short-lived show about the nuclear war? The small town.
Jericho?
Jericho, yeah.
Yep, that's
he
a great
was amazing
show too.
In that show.
What's another show I got into this summer?
Yeah.
I usually do not like broadcast TV, like science fiction series or horror series, because they don't do it well.
Yeah.
Like, I tried to get into Revolution, and I thought it was horrible.
It was horrible.
But I did like the Under the Dome.
You know, I have watched Under the Dome, but it's lost me in the last couple episodes just because it's better than
Revolution, though.
Actually, you know what? I stuck with Revolution against my better judgment, and this season has actually been well beyond. It's actually been good.
Is it true that they changed how that main character girl acts on the show because
she was so annoying.
People complain she's so annoying in the first episode.
She's still a sort of smug, self-satisfied, entitled teenager who just happens to live in a post-apocalyptic
world. Many times has she mentioned, I've probably only watched the first three episodes before I gave up on it.
Yeah.
How many times since has she uttered the line, but we're family?
At least once an episode. and you've basically put your finger on what's wrong with most network television shows is because they have to harp on this, like, easy string pulling, family, you know, my son, my mother, my daughter.
Revolution was over the top with it, literally.
Over the top, disgusting.
Those first three episodes, she meets her uncle, who's this, like, this rebel hero.
Are you familiar with this show at all?
Not at all.
It's basically about what
happens if electricity turns off in the United States in, like, it's like 10 years
so
later.
So this girl, she has to meet...
Well, obviously family would be important.
She has to find out what happens to her mother and her brother. Her mother and her brother, correct? Or no, her brother, she has to find out what happens to him.
Yeah.
So she is looking for her uncle, who's some sort of rebel leader. and to convince him to help her.
The country's broken off into like factions, like local areas.
And to convince him to help her, she must utter the word, "But we're family. You gotta help us because we're family."
Yeah.
Like 1,000 times.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was disgusting.
First 3 episodes.
So what would you guys would have had more respect if she was like, "Look, I think we're in a complex situation." Family ties have nothing to do with
this. This uncle hasn't seen her in like what, like something like 18 years or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I mean, like obviously, there is a cutoff line for family.
Yeah, I mean, please.
He's like, if I don't see my mom for more than like 2 months, I forget her.
Yeah, like Can I ask
my
Matt?
My dad is related to those lawyers, Binder and Binder. I've never met them before. That's like me going up to him and going, "Hey, could you pass? Can I borrow some money? We're family." Come
well, I'll
on.
Just to put
well,
a pin
should.
In that. I just will say that it's not necessarily the plot line itself that they have family ties, but it is hit over the head. That, you know, that it's constantly shoving it in your face as if it's the only motivating factor for anyone to do anything ever.
And, oh, I see.
And it's kind of cloying. Go ahead.
You know, I see. Can I ask you a question about a show I do watch?
Sure.
I want to know. Are you still watching Boardwalk Empire?
Yes.
Okay. So I realized what my beef with that show is, because I've been watching Boardwalk Empire from the beginning, and I keep watching, and every single season I'm always like, I'm done. I don't want to watch this anymore.
Yeah.
Because part of it is because for a lot of episodes just bounce in between being really boring and then just like decadently violent and disgusting in a way that like
sounds like television.
The boredom doesn't justify though. You know what I mean? Like there isn't like if something really messed up happened in The Sopranos or The Wire or something, the show is so great that it's like fine or maybe even totally necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But with Boardwalk, it's like, okay, historical reenactment theater for a half an hour, and then all of a sudden this guy's eyeballs are going to get, you know, gouged out by a screwdriver.
I've never seen the show.
So I realized though, because I was watching last week, and I all of a sudden I was like, oh, whoa, I got to watch next week. This is cool.
Yeah.
Every single season, they have this strategy where it's like boring for several episodes,
right.
And then in the third
Heats
episode,
towards the end.
They're
yeah.
like, boom, this is actually a good series.
Yeah.
What's that about?
I think they have the guts and the kind of freedom to do what you're calling historical reenactment theater, which actually I find compelling just to sort of exist in that world. I think I might have said that the last time we brought this up. But it doesn't – it does seem to come out of nowhere, and they definitely do give you sort of the gratuitous, like, violence, you know, every now and then. But I think that they actually are trying to be somewhat less plot-oriented and much more character-oriented.
No, I think – so, okay. So that's interesting. So my only other question about Boardwalk – and Matt, you this is relevant for you too, right? Because in this season, there's an amazing character played by Jeffrey Wright. He's one of my favorite actors. And he plays this like Caribbean gangster character, which is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And he is – in the show, he's depicted as being very close to Marcus Garvey, who was, you know, of course, a really important like black nationalist leader essentially in the 30s, 20s and 30s, 20s. But is there like – I mean, I know Marcus Garvey is really controversial, but there's like no proof at all that Marcus Garvey – like he might have been a scam artist. He might have been any number of things. But there's no proof that like – his right-hand man was like a brutal heroin smuggler that like, you know, like raped women. And
right.
I mean, like, you know, this guy is
sold
heroin. I mean, he's a very evil, evil character. And his base of operations is Marcus Garvey's organization. Like, that seems a little problematic to me.
You know, it's that whole character is like literally mustache twirling bad guy.
Literally.
You know, so he's really... If Jeffrey Wright wasn't as good an actor as he is, and even sometimes it crosses over, it's still a little like, ladies to the railroad tracks. So that whole character is very kind of broad, I think. And in terms of Boardwalk Empire, I think it's their social commentary that, you know, he is this kind of dark, evil villain who's taking advantage of his own people under the guise of, you know, it's all about the hypocrisy of... Nucky's a businessman, but he's really a gangster. You know, these people are running clubs, but really they're shooting people in the alley. And I feel like he fits into that. Just it's like equal opportunity, broad character.
That's like his exploitation point,
right?
Okay, all right.
That's my guess. But you know, I'm enjoying the sort of battle between him and Chalky, who's also an interesting character,
Kind
of low class backwoods guy who's made well, and you know the tension with his family and the whole marriage thing.
Oh, the great opening scene!
Is this what it feels like to talk about a show you don't watch?
Ha! Yes.
I mean, to listen to people talking about a show that you don't watch.
There was actually a great scene when Chalky first meets this guy, because it's true. Like, Chalky's from Texas. He's very like country, and this guy Dr. Narcisse has a lot of like pretensions, basically, and he is very sophisticated, and he calls black people Nubians. I don't think there's much, but it's a term, like it has like an African connotation, right. And he calls Chalky a Nubian in their first meeting, and he's just like, I'm from Texas. Which is like one of the best lines in the show.
No, does he call them Nubians or does he call them Libyans?
Or Libyans, that's right. Libyans.
And when was Libya itself founded? Do we know?
I don't know when modern Libya was founded, but
I don't know if that comes from that or that was the source of that. So there's actually probably as many people die in Boardwalk Empire as they do in The Walking Dead.
Right. All right, go back to recommendations. I was just curious. Curious what you thought about that.
I'll just say about Boardwalk Empire, I enjoy it. The direction, the set design, Steve Buscemi himself is always compelling to me, even when he's kind of a shithead, if I may say.
You can say whatever you want. It's after one.
Oh, great. So I enjoy that show, even though I feel like it has gotten better as the seasons have progressed. And the first one was sort of like a tease in a way.
I agree.
Last show I watched on HBO was True Blood. And I gave up on that after the second season.
Wow. Well, you know, did I ever tell you that?
Did you watch True Blood?
I didn't, but I only watched the vampire stuff because my fiance is
True Blood. I was never a big fan of vampires.
Yeah.
But I thought True Blood.
They're fake, really. When you think about it, it's fake.
Season one and two were very good, and then the third season they introduced all these other monsters, and it was just too much.
So you don't watch The Vampire Diaries?
I do not watch The Vampire Diaries. Although I did start watching Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah,
which is actually a really good show.
Yeah, it's a police procedural, and I personally want to see the Ichabod Crane who's been asleep for 200 years wake up and go, what the hell happened? And then you know he doesn't do enough of that.
The actor is really good. Who plays him?
He's really good.
What's his name? Do you know?
I don't know his name.
I don't know his name.
He's a first time actor for me. But I've enjoyed that show just for the time travel thing, like, you know, learning to live in the world. I always...
Another show I've started watching is Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
I'm late on that. I'm late on that.
I got... What's your review?
No, I haven't seen it. It's down the line of things for me to...
Oh, you know, I would love...
I really good.
I would love Film Guy Matthew, his in the soundboard with just, yeah... I would love to play that
There was no intent there. It was you know what? It was a registering of my overwhelm with the number of shows that are out there. I feel like I have such a long list that...
I've also started watching a few cartoons, too, that I haven't previously watched. Sam will be happy to know I've been getting into Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
I saw a few episodes before this, before I got into it, and I didn't really... I mean, I liked it, but it was nothing I really got into, and then I started watching some on Netflix, and I was like, I really like this show.
Only cartoon I can ever watch is Archer.
This is going to be completely. I'm sure none of you guys watch this show. I've got into the show Adventure Time. It's like a sort of
Ren. It's got the Legend of Zelda logo.
Yeah, sort of like that. It's sort of
I've seen it.
It's like Ren and Stimpy-ish.
It feels like that. I loved Ren and Stimpy back.
It feels like that to me. It's like weird.
Yeah, I don't watch too much animation unless I literally every now and then I'll watch the Batman cartoon that's on right now. It's pretty good.
Is it as good as the one that was on in the late 90s?
Yeah, I watched that one when I was in high school
was like amazing.
It's one of those cartoons.
That was a cartoon where there were it wasn't a cartoon for kids.
No, and this Beware the Bat is more like a, you know, kind of a late teens kind of end up.
This is
drama.
I just have to say, this is what so much more of a welcoming environment for you here when we're hosting. We're not harassing you about the schedule of your marriage, who's performing the ceremony.
Has that happened yet? Are you married?
Well, he's a fiance.
We're engaged, and it's it's in the works.
I'm not plugging you for Marc Maron disses or gossip. You're basically just standing here being
any news?
Yeah, I like Batman cartoons. They're great. Yeah.
Any news in your life with Maron?
Jeez, no.
Nothing?
No. I reached out to him when I heard that he and his girlfriend had broken up, and he was just like, yeah, whatever. You know.
Did you reach out to him by saying, by the way, I am getting married?
No, he already knew that. I told him that when it happened.
Really sorry about you and your girlfriend. Mine? Me and Mike, we just got engaged.
It wasn't like that. And that was, it was old news. So no, nothing really like that. But I just want to say a final word about cartoons for you, since this is an area that you might have some interest in. I tried to watch some of the Marvel-based cartoons, you know.
They're not as good.
They're so jokey and kind of, like, ironic. And what the one thing I like about DC animation is they take it seriously. They treat it as if it was real,
that's,
as much as it could be.
That's the same with those comic book universes in general, though. Marvel's always taken themselves much more as a comic book. Like, their characters do silly things.
Well, I don't feel like the movies, the cinematic representation
of Marvel. Are you
kidding?
The Avengers?
I mean, they had some humor in it, but it still had, like,
horrible
attacks.
Grabbing Loki and smashing him like a...
But that was actually funny.
That's what I'm saying.
That's different than the way
you would
that
never
the,
see that in a Batman or a Superman or any DC movie, because DC's always been a more darker, more... That's why Superman movies never really took off until this previous one, because Superman...
No pun intended.
Superman's not a dark character, but he's too bright for the DC world.
But it's still, that kind of humor is different than the, like, looking at the camera and winking and mugging, like, that kind of stuff that they do in the Spider-Man and
But they do that in even the movies, though.
I feel like it's a generational thing, though, because these cartoons are, they're like... Look how extreme we are. It's kind of like
The Avengers movie had footage, like a special thing you had to watch at the end of the. It was them having
shawarma. That is subtle enough that I don't find that as offensive. But I feel like there's a disconnect between the way that the TV shows portray this kind
the
of
spider.
Like, oh my god! Like Spider-Man looks into the camera and does this kind of like.
So then you like the Amazing Spider-Man movies.
That a cartoon Spider-Man does a postmodern mugging.
Yeah, basically.
I just wanted that registered.
I mean, it's so.
I might even have to feed that to Sam.
It's got like three quotes around it.
I understand. I got it.
But anyway, that's all.
All right. Well,
why?
We're gonna run out of time, so let's get to these.
Okay. So I did try to look at some zombie stuff for you because
it'll be great,
really
if there's one recommendation for me too. I'm just saying.
And right, I beautiful. Always I
don't
have
forget
you,
no, you know what, you what let's before Michael tries to get how he's
take
all
a breath.
Yeah, I need to calm down here.
Easy,
before
take it easy.
Before Michael gets to him being all smug and oh I'm so smart I need a highbrow movie. Let's not forget. The first time Michael ever gave us a movie recommendation, and it was something like How Dogs Work or something like that.
What?
Do you remember
that?
Oh,
no, it was an amazing PBS documentary on the emotional life of dogs.
I
don't really get it.
It was funny, though. I remember Sam was like, what?
Yeah,
I
mean, guys.
I tend to like the things that both you guys like, so there's no need
He's bringing the – and one of my favorite movies ever made is Super Troopers. So I'm totally fine with non-highbrow.
You know, I feel like you guys don't need to absorb Sam. The sort of he encourages this kind of bickering and kind of
Matt is much more like obviously pliable and has less of an independent thought process.
Says the guy who just opened up to Edward Snowden 2 weeks ago.
I found that to be a very well-reasoned sort of evolution. So
Mr. Obama? Michael Brooks here. I'm not supposed to like Edward Snowden. Okay.
You guys are a family, okay? And sometimes brothers fight.
It's actually really disturbing. Matt really is the little brother I never had.
Yeah.
Okay. Except I'm the one who
Look, Daddy loves you both equally.
Oh,
you know?
Oh. All right,
we'll get
to
the recommendations.
Oh. All right.
All right, so I tried to watch the zombie movie because I looked at the list of like recent zombie movies. Have you seen this movie? It's not good.
I've probably not seen it.
I'm not recommending it. Dead Snow.
Is that the one with the soldiers?
Nazi zombies.
Yes, seen it.
Wow. Okay, not good. But it was sort of had some Evil Dead references.
With the dark like mist. Not mist, but like it was like a fog that would come over.
No, actually, they were in a snowy mountains.
This might be a different one. Then I saw one where they were in like the trenches.
No, is there another zombie Nazi movie?
Yes, I think
there
is.
Wow, okay. All right, well, I can't recommend that in a good conscience, but have you ever seen Lucio Fulci's Zombie?
Yes, I have. Okay. The one where you have zombie versus shark.
You know what? I don't remember that particular scene, but I do remember when they put the guy on the nail, and the nail comes
through
his eye.
Some people might know that movie as Zombie 2.
Oh, he has a zombie
because,
too?
Because...
It was like re-released
when,
in America.
No, because when it was released in Italy, Lucio Fulci wanted to convince people to go see the movie under the guise that it was a sequel to Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, wow. The Italians, they were like that, weren't they?
Yes.
They would take any advantage.
And so, okay, so that movie is called Zombie 2. Mm-hmm. So, and then later zombie movies came out, not anything to do with Lucio Fulci,
mm-hmm.
but they took the zombie name. So if you know it as Zombie, and then you see Zombie 3, 4, 5, and 6, and 7,
you're going to be lost.
You're like, where'd Zombie 2 go? And that's okay. because they're going by it being called Zombie 2.
Okay. I never went past Zombie, the Lucio Fulci zombie, although I did have an Italian horror phase, so I saw a bunch of his other
ones. One of them is literally about zombie birds.
Zombie birds.
So it's like
the birds meets zombies.
Yes, except it's
that's interesting.
Except really the birds, except calling them zombies, it's basically the same thing.
Right.
Like
they're just birds.
They're not doing anything different.
Right.
Yes.
Like because the birds don't normally talk. Yes. And, like have lives.
Yes.
So, oh my God, that bird is so much dumber than usual. Yeah. Be sure to hit it in the head. I don't know. Yeah.
I would recommend Zombie, though, because it is a quintessential horror film. It really is.
Yeah, it really is.
And it is a famous scene, actually, where the zombie fights a shark underwater. It's a very famous scene.
Okay. I blocked it out. So, anyway. Oh, I just wanted to say while I had the chance that if you were Rex and Ira.
Oh, also.
Yeah.
Sorry. Zombie is the only zombie movie, actually, to take place in New York City. In the beginning of the movie and in the end of the movie.
Oh, very good.
It has a very cool scene
where...
You
don't count the Will Smith, you know, what's it called?
That wasn't a zombie movie.
They weren't zombies.
They weren't zombies.
They were vampires?
They were some, weird thing.
Some hybrid. Okay.
I like the movie, but they weren't zombies.
Okay. I take it
There's back. A cool scene where the zombies are crossing the Brooklyn Bridge. It's a pretty cool scene.
Okay, yeah. Well, I was just going to suggest that if I was ever on, because by the way, I just wanted to say I loved the Rex and Ira and the Deuce version of you guys' show.
Oh, the Ken, Ken, and Ken show.
The Ken, Ken, and Ken show, yeah. It was awesome.
Also known in conservative corners as the KKK show.
The
Triple K, back at ya.
I was just trying to think of, like, if you had a film segment, what my name would be, and I decided it would be Michael Medved.
That's a great, yes.
Okay.
So what else you got for us?
All right, so did you ever see...
What movie would you recommend on the Ken and Ken and Ken show? Like Occupy Unmasked?
On the Ken, Ken like and Ken show? What would I would recommend like Red
Birth
River.
Birth of a Nation?
No, like a great John Wayne movie. Like
Red Dawn?
Legitimately
Red Dawn.
No, Red River.
Oh, okay.
Or Rio Bravo.
Rio Bravo's a good movie.
Legitimately good.
You're talking about legitimately good.
Yeah, right wing guys. It's not like they have bad taste in everything. You know, happen to think
everything. Charlton Heston.
My fiance's father is a Fox News viewer, and we connect all the time on movies such as John Wayne's oeuvre. So there are good things to come out of.
Did you have a recommendation for me?
Yeah, I have.
You could also recommend The Dark Knight because that's a very right wing movie.
Kind of is, isn't it? Fascistic.
I was actually. I don't think we have time to like go down that road, but I have to. I was. It blew my mind how right-wing that movie was.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I would say not only right-wing, I would say, like...
Crypto-fascist.
Crypto-fascist.
They all were.
Kind of cannot... They all were. That was the most blunt. But anyways...
Just because you had, like, your Occupy Wall Street
Yeah, the Occupy Wall Street as a stand-in, and it was this Jacobin... I mean, it was just... It was that was shocking. Actually.
Someone did a YouTube video that basically said how to make a superhero movie in modern times, and they all basically have some of the same elements. Did you see this going around?
Which
this video about like what all the superhero movies recently had in common? One of them is just blowing up New York, like just attacking New York. And as far as they go, I think that was probably my favorite because it was just so anarchic, and you really were like, wow, this is society coming apart at the seams. So even though it could be said to be kind of a Fox News kind of like scare tactic. I enjoyed it in the.
I don't even know if it was even that crude. I mean, I think, you know, I don't even know if I don't think it's I don't think it's I don't think you totally bring it down to that level.
Yeah.
But the politics of it were also like, yeah, they were just pretty clear.
Yeah. And who can save us? A billionaire.
Exactly.
One lone billionaire. So I wanted to get into another realm of cinema that I don't know if you've. Or you've ever even... You probably have. So do you know who Harmony Korine is?
Yes, I do.
Do you have any of his films in your history?
What is he made again?
Okay, Kids. He
yes,
wrote the screenplay
yes,
for Kids. So
yes.
I assume
but
that's your
not,
Bible.
That's not his... No, that's not his movie. That's isn't that What's-His-Face?
Larry Clark directed it.
Yes.
But he wrote the screenplay.
He wrote the screenplay.
Yeah, but then he went on
to make... It's a very disturbing movie.
Yeah, it is. So Harmony Korine is from Nashville, but he lived in Queens for a long time with his grandmother, and that's when he was the, you know, the street urchin. And
he did Spring Breakers, right?
That's right. Have you seen that?
I have. It's very good.
Okay, I was going to be my recommendation
Spring
for you.
Spring Breakers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I want to hear your opinion on it. I found it extremely engaging. My fiance hated it.
Spring break forever.
And now we say that to each other when we want to annoy each other.
Same here, actually. Yeah. With my girlfriend and myself. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, congratulations. But meanwhile, that movie is so, it's so sort of cognitively dissonant. Like, you have, on the one hand, he's portraying kind of jiggling boobs, kind of spring break exploitation.
Right.
But at the same time, he's done this weird, extremely kind of disorienting editing and kind of visualization of it, where it's like left on a little too long, so you're kind of like uncomfortable.
Huh.
And ooh, it sort of seems much more scummy. And
I
then
thought I wouldn't
becomes,
like it. But it was actually really
no,
good.
No, no, this has actually been recommended and to me before.
Fun,
so I'm gonna check it out for
fun
sure.
Fun fact for our wrestling fans out there. Jeff Jarrett plays the pastor in the movie.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
What was the next thing you were saying?
I was just gonna say I was just gonna finish a sentence. It was basically it also turns into what I feel is like a really legitimate kind of like heist movie.
Yes.
So you're actually kind of involved in it. Like,
oh, I'm
my
into
God.
That.
And
my favorite part of the movie.
Yes. Why don't you talk?
Yes, my favorite part of the movie is when he's showing the girls all of his stuff.
Well, that is the best scene.
And he says,
all right, well,
look at all my shit.
Yeah, that's in the trailer.
Okay.
And then, like, the way they turn
yeah,
the tables
on yeah, I'm not spoiling
anything.
Him,
it actually has, like, a lot of it kind of encapsulates, I think, not to get too, like, pretentious about it, but the way sort of teenage girls are actually so much scarier than
yeah.
sort of almost any monster. Like, their ability to use right. sex in their bodies, and yet they're kind of
James
ignorant of
Franco
their effect.
James Franco is very good in that movie.
I'm going to watch this
he
movie.
He should win
yeah.
something for
and
it.
And I just want to throw, without any explanation, without, you know, because I think we should read some IMs if you want to stick around
yeah.
to my IM reading, which would be great.
Sure.
But I would just, in the spirit of sharing, I would say on Netflix, there's this amazing Bob Marley biography documentary I just saw. Incredible.
Yeah. yeah.
You should definitely watch that.
Okay, what's that one called?
It's I think it's just called Marley, actually.
Okay.
No, I'm sure it's a great movie. It's just very cliche of Michael Brooks to do.
Cliche?
Recommend a Bob Marley movie.
I love Bob Marley.
Is that cliche?
Yeah, I don't know. It's
if
just,
you listen
you
to
like
Matt,
black people.
If you,
I,
no,
yeah,
no, it's more like
Matt's
if you listen
saying.
To
Matt has
no,
some issues with
no,
that. Like Sam.
No. Oh, no, if you listen to Matt and Mike shows,
yeah.
often Michael's choice of bumper music is Bob Marley.
Oh, the bumper music.
Well,
I thought it's also hip hop,
well,
right?
A lot like, of, you know,
Broadway I associate music. You more with like Nas.
Oh,
Nas.
Is that why you recommended Michael the Spring Breakers movie? Because James Franco's character reminded you of him?
That's actually very funny.
I'm looking for it. I gotta see it because then I can understand
yeah.
the disc.
I mean,
yeah. And then the other movie.
Can I just say one?
Yeah,
I just
want
to finish because actually, had you seen Spring Breakers, I wanted to recommend to you Harmony Korine's first directorial debut, Gummo.
I've seen Gummo.
Have you? Okay. All right.
That movie's probably the most disturbing movie.
It's a horror
and then,
movie.
And then the movie I would recommend actually really quick.
Did he do Kent Park?
Yeah, he did actually.
He
wrote the screenplay.
That's probably the one movie in that group of movies I've not seen.
Yeah, me neither.
That's because you can't find it here.
Yeah.
So, did you ever see Il Divo?
From like the 80s?
No, it's a newer one. It's about this Italian prime minister who was like in the mafia.
Wow.
Basically, but it's shot like... It's just a very bizarre movie. Like it's like a gangster movie, but the way it's shot and the way he's portrayed, I would say it falls somewhat. It's the closest I've ever liked to a horror movie.
Okay,
and that's worth checking out.
Did Harmony Korine do What's Up Rockers?
No.
Who was that?
I don't know, but that was like.
Was that Larry Clark?
You know, he may have directed that one. I'm not sure. It was in that sort of derivative mode of sort of.
Although it was probably like the cleanest of all those movies.
Was
actually,
it?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't
still
see that
not, still not. You don't want to show it to your children. But.
Right. He also did a Mr. Lonely about the enclave of celebrity impersonators who moved to an island to live together. That was actually bizarre but interesting.
All right, so let's go over all the
Donkey Boy, which takes place is basically in Queens.
Let's read a few IMs.
Let's recall these movies because a lot are being thrown out here. Yeah, Michael recommended.
I recommended Il Divo
and the Marley documentary.
And the Marley documentary.
And Matthew Film Guy recommended
Spring Breakers and Gummo by Harmony Korine.
Okay,
which are not for the faint of heart.
And
so.
I guess I'll take Zombie 2.
All right.
Zombie
there
2.
There we go. Okay.
All right.
And obviously Zombie 1 if you haven't
by
seen
Lucio
it.
By Lucio Fulci.
Zombie 1 is actually Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, he missed that part, I think.
Oh. Okay, I can't keep track.
He's doing too
much. I'm not going to see any of it anyway, so it's okay.
All right.
I will
You're
see,
not going to see Night of the Living Dead? You've never seen Night of the Living Dead?
No.
Dude.
Don't see it. Don't see it.
What?
No.
Dude, that
Relax.
Movie.
I'll
that
see
movie
it.
Is amazing.
Okay. How about,
not,
how about
not
Dead Alive by Peter Jackson?
Dead Alive. Oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah, okay.
All right. I will see all of this.
With the baby? That's a great movie.
Yeah, going back into the womb. Oh, amazing.
Oh, it's great.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some IMs here. I'm going to just get here in the frame.
Yep, please. Wherever you need me.
There we go. The mic is back to where it needs to be. I think I broke it. Bush and Chains. Germany says... it's a Freebie Friday, by the way.
Clearly.
So please become a member today at Majority.fm. Support this show by donating your account, liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter. Vote in the podcast awards. It is the last day. People's Choice and... Politics/news. Podcastawards.com. Bush and Chains. Germany says sorry. Majority FM mass murder lovers. Orwellian extrajudicial excuse mongers. U.S. I can't even. Disciples and serial killer Obama bots. But we reject illegal killings. Hacktivist Jeremy Hammond gets... Oh, yeah. I want to talk about this really quick. 2-minute segment. Jeremy Hammond, who is... the activist slash hacker who leaked those Stratford emails was sentenced today after pleading guilty to 10 years in prison after he's already been in prison for 20 months. This is just unbelievable, especially when you consider, number one, according to Jeremy Hammond, he had no idea what Stratford was until he was talking with former anonymous member and FBI informant Sabu. And then two, the judge presiding over the case and who sentenced him, Judge Preska, is married to a client of Stratford. So basically you're looking at a judge presiding and sentencing someone, presiding over a case and sentencing someone who is technically she's married to a victim of the crime he's being punished for. I mean, what? I mean, this is along with Bradley Manning's, Chelsea Manning's sentence of 35 years. I mean, this is clear right here that if you are an activist who uncovers these secrets, they want to show you, they want to tell you, you will be punished to the full extent of the law. 10 years was the max sentence he could receive under his plea deal. So, it really is amazing. Bush and Chains has got some more for us.
Wow.
I don't know how much more we can take.
Yes.
I mean, I love you, buddy, but come on.
And we sort of get it by now.
Yeah, there was a get-it-ness factor here.
Hammond, when we speak truth to power, we are ignored at best and brutally suppressed at worst. Oh, yeah, go to sparrowmedia.net. They have the full... Jeremy Hammond apparently had this great, great speech he gave, his sentencing statement. Definitely go read that on sparrowmedia.net. Bush and Chains. Obama's totalitarian spy state comes back to haunt and as Asian countries refuse to do business with American tech companies. Gotta love it. Michael, initially the bumper music sucked, but you redeemed yourself. Nah, I mean.
Yes, sir.
Death Leopards. Hey, Matt and Mike. Thank you for the interview with Daniel Goleman back in October. It prompted me to check out his book Focus, which is one of those life changers. I struggle with severe ADD, and this book has helped me out tremendously. Thanks, guys.
I was going to read that, but I forgot.
Pleasure. Dan Goleman's great.
Bob FLV, since this is usually Movie Review Friday, I thought I'd recommend a couple movies. Shade, The Grand, with friend of show Richard Kind. Oh, well, you guys are great. Take care. Thank you.
I don't know that one.
Ah, you do it. There we go.
Yeah,
look at that.
Thank you.
Ian Logsdon, DC as a universe isn't really darker. Most of their heroes are like Superman. Batman is an aberration. What say you?
Well, I totally agree. And in that torrent we were carried away in, I wanted to say that Marvel's characters are sort of inherently darker. It's people, you know,